welcome to this episode of A Language I Love Is, the podcast that's all about languages, linguistics, and love. I'm Danny, and for today's episode, I'm hosting not one, but two guests. Alba Klopes and Joey Barber joined me to talk about their shared interest in one particular language of Spain. It's not Spanish, it's Catalan.
I m'han fet entendre l'importància de tenir una cultura, de tenir una identitat. I el català és una llengua que te proporciona això, perquè quan tu xerres català, no només que xerres català, és que aprens uns valors i aprens una història que te fa entendre que la llengua que tu xerres d'alguna manera descriu una part de qui ets tu i de quins valors tens.
Okay, so for this episode, we have something brand new for the podcast, which I'm super excited about. It's been suggested to me that we have two guests today, still only one of me, and I'm delighted to introduce Alba Klopes and Joey Barber, both of Cardiff University, and they've come along today to talk about one language which they are both equally passionate about, but for different reasons, so we can get into what makes this language special for them. First things first, Joey, Alba, how are you doing today? How are things with you two? And also, where are you in the world?
Very well, thank you, Danny. I'm in Brighton in England.
Thank you. I'm in Girona in Catalonia.
Okay, great stuff. Well, thank you very much for joining me. This is going to be interesting. Let's see how this works with two guests. I think, double the content, which is great for you, dear listener. But let's get stuck into it. Joey, could you introduce the language that we're going to be passionate about today? What is a language that the two of you love?
A language that we both love is Catalan.
Catalan. Okay, fantastic. It's not a surprise. I'm aware of that for the listeners. It is written in the name of the episode, but still, Catalan is what we're going to be talking about today. So, first things first, Albert, this is very important. Let's unpick the Catalan language in terms of geography. Where can we find speakers of this language in terms of country, in terms of the regions within those countries? Set the scene in terms of where we can expect to hear some Catalan.
I assume that if people have heard about Catalan, they will place correctly the majority of the speakers in Catalonia, which is a autonomous community in Spain, but they can also find them in three other states. You can also find Catalan speakers in Andorra, where it is an official language, in the south of France, also known as Northern Catalonia, and in Alghero, in Sardinia, which is an island of Italy. But also in Spain, you can find Catalan speakers in Valencia and in the Balearic Islands, as well as tiny strip in Aragon.
And how many speakers of the language are we talking here? How many people roughly would speak it as a first or a second language?
I can't tell you the number of first language speakers, but between all people with some knowledge of Catalan, depending on who you ask, they might say 10 million people or 14 million people.
And of course, within Spain, the famous language, the one that, you know, it's written in the name of the country, is Spanish, of course. And we'll get into the differences between the two. But in terms of geography, is there a hard linguistic border? If you go west from, say, Barcelona, will there be a point where people suddenly switch? Or is it more gradual? I know it's very hard to pin down, but what is the kind of the divisions within Spain in terms of languages?
Yes, they are quite distinguishable. I mean, of course, if you have a trained ear, if you're a Catalan speaker, you will have no doubt that the other person is speaking Spanish and the other way around. So once you, if you go west, once you go beyond the Strip of Aragon, then you'll notice that it's definitely Spanish and not Catalan anymore. In fact, in Valencia, the autonomous community, there are even more marked borders with that. Half of Valencia speaks Catalan, or Valencian as they call it, and the other half speaks Spanish. That used to be the part of Valencia which spoke Aragonese, but sadly Aragonese kind of extinguished and all the people there started speaking Spanish.
Right, understood. And I imagine that perhaps once upon a time, it would have been a much more gradual shift as you're going south, as you're going west across the country. But now, I imagine the borders, the political borders are quite hard, and so are the linguistic borders. Well, let's get into that history then. Joey, can you put Catalan in its wider context for us? It belongs to a pretty famous family of languages, right?
It does. It belongs to the Romance language family, which is the languages which derive from Latin. It's categorized as Western Romance, which is perhaps not surprising given its geography. One of the common ways of sort of distinguishing two groups of Romance languages, if you imagine a sort of line going across northern Italy, La Spezia Rimini line, it's called south and east of there. So many sort of varieties of Italian and Romanian. You have things like plurals ending in vowels, and voiceless plosives are not united between vowels. Whereas to the north and the west, so France, Spain, you have plural is generally S, and you have the nition of intervocalic consonants. So an example of this is Italian chain is catena. In Catalan and also in Spanish, it's cadena. So to becomes the. So it fits predictably into that sort of scheme. It's categorized, I believe, often as Gallo-Romance, so connecting it more with French historically. There are records, I believe, Alba would be able to talk more about this, but there are records of old Catalan going back to pretty much to the court of Charlemagne. And it's very closely related to Occitan. I believe Catalan and Occitan are believed to have split from one another in relatively recent times, although of course this is not easy to pin down. But some examples of links more to French and Occitan than to Spanish would be some basic verbs. To eat is menjar, not like Spanish comer, but like French manger. To speak is parlar, like parler, not like hablar in Spanish. Although, of course, centuries of close contact with Spanish has perhaps led to a slightly more alignment towards Spanish. So, for example, I believe the word mar, sea, used to be feminine. In historical records, it's feminine. Nowadays, it's masculine. And this may be due to the fact that, of course, it's masculine in Spanish.
If we think of all Romance languages being sibling languages, Catalan and Occitan have been poetically considered twin languages. So that's the similarity between them. But they're not the same language, which was a mistake that some academics thought on the 19th century, that they believed to be the same language because most of Catalan medieval literature was written in Occitan. But no, they're distinguished languages.
But still, that's going to confuse things, right? That you've got this language north of the Pyrenees and people are using it south of the Pyrenees. That's going to, well, confuse a few medieval historians, because I suppose Occitan was really influential, right? It was the language of the troubadours in medieval times. So wonderful stuff. So this is a really good picture. We can sort of imagine a big sweep of languages going around the Western Mediterranean, up the coast of Spain, into France, and then down into northern Italy. With that in mind, I think, it's very important that we dig into a little bit more of the history, especially since that early point in time. So, Joey, you mentioned about, how there is old Catalan, and we have some sources for this, but the history of Catalan as a language in terms of prestige, it goes up and down, right? So, Joey, could you walk us through what happens after that early point in time, and why is Catalan not as famous as Spanish, for example?
Well, during sort of the 13th century, Barcelona, which is where Catalan is spoken, joined forces with the Crown of Aragon, which was a similar language. And these sort of Aragon-Catalan unity became very powerful, actually. They controlled vast swathes of the Mediterranean, the Western Mediterranean, including Sardinia, or parts of Sardinia, Corsica, and even Naples at one point. Also, it was spoken as far as Greece, in fact. And I believe there is something about some sort of act of violence took place, and the Albanian word for monster ended up being something like Catalan, although I don't have a source for you for that one. This began to wane towards sort of the end 15th century-ish, and this was a little later than this was around the time when Castilian Spanish began to emerge. There were, of course, many different languages spoken in Spain. This is still the case, of course, is Asturo-Leonese and plenty of other Extremaduran. But Castilian kind of won out for various reasons. I think part of the reason was actually that in the 16th century, Madrid, where Castilian was spoken, was chosen arbitrarily to be the capital. I mean, it was not one of the biggest cities in Spain at that point, but it was basically in the center. So the king at the time chose that to be the capital for ease of control of the whole peninsula.
And in terms of then the modern history, can you take us forward into the modern period, the 19th, 20th centuries, up to the modern day, so then Alba is, ready to come in with the modern situation of the language?
In the 19th century, as happened with many European countries, there was a sort of revival of literature, the Renascenza, they call it, obviously, the word Renaissance. I think it's been suggested that this was actually linked or sort of came on the tail of Sir Walter Scott's novels, giving sort of Scotland its own nationalist revival. So there was lots of works, lots of poems were written in Catalan in the late 19th century. A famous one is Meradageth Canigó, which is a famous mountain in the Pyrenees, associated a lot with Catalan history, Catalan symbolism, Catalan nationalism. And that leads us into the 20th century for Alba.
Well, yeah, I mean, Alba, please. There is one particular figure in the 20th century who had an enormous influence on all of Spain and certainly an influence on its languages. Introduce him for us if you can.
Of course, I assume you're talking about Franco, which was the main dictator of Spain's 20th century, although not the only one. We had a previous one in the 20s, but from the 36, 39 onwards, he's the ruler of Spain until 1975. And he was a fascist, and his main goal was to unify Spain, a whole country united under the same culture. And most of Spanish stereotypes from which still live on. If you go to Spain and you buy Sevillana or you go eat tapas and all of this, it represents the whole of Spain because he decided so. It was part of cultural unification. So under that cultural unification, regional languages, as they would call them, were sort of the enemy against homogenization. So the Romance ones were considered dialects, Catalan, Galician, the remainings of Aragonese, the remainings of Asturian, they were all considered dialects of Spanish. And Basque, which I guess you'll be doing an episode if you can, because that's such an interesting language, could not be considered a dialect of Spanish because of the obvious differences. But it was also regarded and it was considered the language of savages. So we got to a situation in which no language apart from Spanish could be used publicly, but it was still spoken privately. So when, the dictatorship ended with his death, everything had to be restored. If we wanted to preserve the language diversity and protect the minority and minoritized speakers, language speakers' rights, something had to be done. And that's where language planning and language policy came in. And that's where my job kind of started. That's the origins of my current job.
So I suppose then that in the linguistic landscape of Spain, the country, within the relationship between Catalan and Spanish, you're still working through the legacy of Francoism. You're still working through these attitudes that emerged from this period. What are the attitudes today in terms of Catalan? Is it a language? Is it a dialect? And also, what is the status of Catalan today? Is it healthy as a language? I know it's complicated, but if you could, describe the situation and your own part in it, of course.
Regarding the health of the language, some sociolinguists have said that Catalan has, in Catalan, they say it's mala salut de ferro, which would roughly translate as it has an very good bad health. Like it's been in a bad shape for many years, but still stands and it's still strong. As I said before, there are still at least 10 million speakers, which put the language in a medium-sized position rather than a minority language. But still, we say it's a minoritized one because it's official along with Spanish or French or Italian in many of the territories where it's spoken. And you can't fully live in Catalan. There are no Catalan monolinguals, and no Catalan speakers can fully live in Catalan because at one point or another, you will realize that you can't watch the film you want to watch or read the book you want to read or even speak to someone without them understanding you while still living in your hometown. So that's why we say it's a minoritized language. And after the dictatorship, we say that we're trying to normalize the language, trying to make it normal in the sense that you can speak it wherever and no one will be surprised. And we're still putting effort into that. So nowadays, everyone knows that at least in Spain, well, at least in Catalonia, in Spain, there are some doubts that Catalan and Spanish are different languages. Catalan is not a dialect of Spanish. In fact, there's a Spanish dialect based on Catalan, but Catalan is not a Spanish dialect. But other problems emerge, such as I mentioned before that a Catalan in Valencia is called Valencian, or they call it Valencian. That's because there are some efforts of Valencian people, though they're more Spanish aligned or Castilian aligned, that insist that Catalan and Valencian are two different languages in order to put a division in the unity of the Catalan language, because Valencian is a different language, then it means it has less speakers. It means that our linguistic connection isn't that strong, and we shouldn't be considered as part of the same nation.
I think it might help the people listening if we give some concrete examples. Languages are not these kind of abstract, gaseous things that exist out there. They exist through people. Take yourself, for example. What role does Catalan play in your daily life? It is the language of your home, right?
Yeah, right. It's my first language. I speak Catalan to my parents, and I live in a city where most people speak Catalan. It's the normal language there. You're acquainted with sociolinguistic terms such as anonymity and authenticity. It's an anonymous language there. So all my friends speak Catalan. However, that's not the situation in Barcelona. I said before I live in Girona. That's in the north of Catalonia, halfway between Barcelona and Perpignan. So in Barcelona, it wouldn't necessarily be like that. If you undergo the Catalan scholar system, everyone is able to speak Catalan there. We all learn Catalan. It's a compulsory subject. However, it's once you go into private settings that if someone's a native Spanish speaker, they might feel more comfortable with that. And you said before, what are the legacies of Franco's dictatorship? One of them is that we've grown used to thinking that changing to Spanish when someone speaks to us in Spanish is good manners, while it's just fear of being repressed. So yes, the tendency is that if we don't initiate conversations in Catalan, if someone talks back to Spanish to us, then we'll be speaking all in Spanish.
I suppose then one way for a language to become healthier and to be more accepted is if people from abroad are learning the language. It shows that there's interest that goes beyond the borders of the individual country. And I think we really should ask you, Joey, you're the expert here. What's it like to learn Catalan, in terms of the differences, its relationships to other Romance languages that you may know, and are there, enough materials out there? Because I think when you have things like, a Duolingo course or whatever other language learning apps are available, but whatever you use, if Catalan is there, that is helping its prestige. So give us your impression. What is it like to learn Catalan at the moment?
There are quite a few resources to learn Catalan online. It's obviously not as many as Spanish or French. I would say it's more than Welsh, or they're more accessible to me than for Welsh. Certainly things like grammar, it's very easy to find verb conjugations and things like that. I believe it exists on Duolingo, but only in the Spanish version of Duolingo. I think it's a very interesting experience learning Catalan. I've been learning it for, I guess, 8-ish months now. I started in July in earnest, due to friendship with Alba, really. If you know another Romance language, it definitely helps. French and Spanish would be the ones which would help the most. I can show some similarities for people who speak other Romance languages would recognize if I conjugate a verb, for example, menjar, present tense. Yo menjo, tu menjes, ella menja, nosaltres mengem, vosaltres mengeu, ells mengen. So the endings, the M ending for the first person plural, the N ending and the stress change for the third person plural, this is all recognizably Romance. But there are, of course, many differences. Unlike Spanish, which tends to have many words ending with or, Catalan cuts off many of the final unstressed vowels, rather similar to French. There are lots of basic words which I had to properly learn. I couldn't just say, oh, that's the same. For example, això, that would be AIXO, which sort of means this, amb, AMB, which means with, and various things which you can recognize them if you've got your searching eye on, but you could easily miss them. Very good, for example, with molbe. Estic molbe would be I am very good, differently to Estoy muy bien in Spanish, or Je suis très bien in French. It's very different. And there are other interesting distinctive features of Catalan. One of them is final obstruent devoicing. So a voiced sound like a V or a Z or a B or a D, when it's at the end of a word, it becomes devoiced. So it would become a F, S, P, or T. Which is something which I didn't associate with the Romance languages. I know Old French had it, and I think some of the other sort of varieties around there, around sort of southern France, northern Spain, do have it. But I associated this more with Germanic languages or Slavic languages. So it definitely gives the language a different feel, because of course endings of words are one of the things which crops up. So you can definitely hear that it's, for example, not Spanish. And obviously, French also is very distinctive. So it's you can hear Catalan even if you can't pick up necessarily many words. Another, I think, quite distinctive feature of Catalan is that rather like English, well, rather like my accent of English, final R is not pronounced usually. Not post-vocalic R. It's not as widespread as that as it is in English. But for example, parlar, Parlar. It's just pronounced parlar. But this isn't always the case. So, for example, the C is still mar, confusingly.
And is that universal? Is that
It's
everywhere?
common in most of the varieties, but it's not ex yeah, it's not universal.
Another tricky thing about the morphology, which is unusual, I think, in a Romance language, is it uses the verb to go as an auxiliary for the past. So, bajmenja, which I can't really translate it literally to English, but it means I went rather than I will go, even though it's using anar, which is the equivalent of saying, the literal equivalent of saying voy a comer in Spanish, which of course would mean the future. You have to do sort of some strange processes in your brain, some sort of neural gymnastics in order to really work out that no, this is the past rather than the future. And I've several times struggled there.
This just messes with my brain. I can't get used to this, and I imagine it probably takes some time in the learning process. The idea that simple present tense go is being used for the past. And this, in French, je vais aller, I am going to go, je vais manger. It's all future, but in Catalan, south of the Pyrenees, go is past. This must be one of the things that you really need to keep on top of, right? I'm getting the picture that when you learn Catalan, you really can't just Catalanify the languages you already know. You really need to get stuck into the details, right?
Yes, one of the things about learning a language which is similar to one that you've learned is yes, you have the advantage of all this shared vocabulary, all these shared structures, but you have to be very careful that you're not assuming similarity where there's difference. You have to be careful of all these false friends. And I don't know how long it takes to really internalize this badge for the past tense form, but it's definitely longer than 8 months, I can tell you that.
Well, let us know when you reach that point. I'd be very interested when you're able to make the switch. As a final point within this language bio, just to quickly mention, this unsurprisingly is a language written with the Latin alphabet. Obviously, it's within, within the shadow of the Romans and the legacy of Rome. But there are some, shall we say, quirks of the way that Catalan is written down. Alba, could you tell us? We were discussing before we started recording something that I just love that I'd never really seen before in another language, a little bit of punctuation.
I assume you mean the flying dot between double L, which distinguishes the sound L, which would be just a double L, from the sound L, like excellent. I mean, we write that, but it's strange to hear that sound outside from formal settings. So I'm not entirely sure I can force myself to do that. But yes, it's meant to terminate an L.
Right, okay, so to make a difference, so you've got two L's side by side, and to disambiguate between the two ways, is it a lure, or is it a lure, the geminate, the double L, you can use the dot. Can you drop this in writing?
Well, in informal writing, many people, when they chat on WhatsApp, they just drop it. And other way of doing that, just using a regular dot, it should be noted that's completely unacceptable for a linguist, for a corrector. They don't accept that. The flying dot can be any shape you want. You can stylize it the way you want it, but it cannot be on the floor. It's a flying dot for something. In Catalan, we would call it punt volat. So that's what it literally means.
And there are some other quirks of the orthography. We've already mentioned the double L. Another is TX to indicate ch at the end of words. So, for example, there's a little village in Mallorca, a lovely village called Felanitx, which ends ITX. And X, it's interesting for people to know if they want to read Catalan names, to know that they are not Spanish. A few years ago, there was a Catalan footballer with the name Xavi, and English commentators would always call him Xavi. When I started learning Spanish, I thought, oh, typical English commentators pronouncing it wrong. It must be Xavi. But as it turns out, it's not Spanish, it's Catalan, and the X is sh, so it is indeed Xavi.
How about that? Point to the football pundits. I like it. So throughout that fantastic language biography, I really am just sat here learning so much from the pair of you. But throughout it, we gained a sense of the two of you and your relationship to this language. But this is the personal section, so let's dig into that a little bit more. Joey, for example, you said that your primary reason, or one of your primary reasons for learning Catalan, is Alba and your friendship. But there's got to be more to it. I mean, how did you two meet, for example? And your interest in languages. Describe yourself to us as a linguist and your linguistic journey so far.
People may be able to tell by my voice. I assume they can that I'm native to southern England. Of course, RP sort of neutralizes geography, so I could be native to any part of England, but southern England. And I think this is a common story for many people. I became interested in language really through reading the works of J.R.R. Tolkien, who people may know was himself a historical linguist and conlanger, creator of languages. And I had a very deep interest in his whole world, his whole mythology. And I learned, I was about 15, that he's created his own languages, and he didn't do it randomly. He would create an old form and then work out what modern forms would be, or he'd do it the other way around. And I thought, how on earth does that work? It's almost like a sort of computer algorithm. You put in the input and it gives you an output. And I thought, I must learn more about this. It sounds really fascinating. So I did an undergraduate degree in the University of the West of England in Bristol in linguistics, and then went on to do a master's in Cardiff, which I'm just wrapping up now, on some Middle English poetry, which is my attempt to sort of have a go at historical linguistics. But I've always loved learning languages, and the threshold for the amount of pressure required for me to start learning a language is fairly low. Alba and I met at Cardiff University studying linguistics. We became friends. We studied Welsh together. And I've always loved the Romance language family. French is the language I speak best apart from English. And I'd studied a bit of Spanish, dipped into other little Italian a little bit. So I thought, why not try Catalan? Again, I didn't know very much about it and I wanted to learn more. And here we are.
And what place does Catalan hold in your affections? I mean, is it top of the list now? Has it risen very quickly to being the language you love the most?
Oh, I think I don't really have a list. I think they're all on a par with one another.
Albert, please, could you tell us a little bit more? You have an interesting role in the Catalan language today. You have some influence on the strength and vitality of this language through your job. Could you just tell us, what is the day job? What does that involve? What have you been up to today, for example?
Since I finished the master's since October, I've been working in the Catalan institution in charge of language planning and language policy. And I've been working in the Department of Promoting Catalan. And myself, along with my colleagues, we're in charge of subsidizing businesses who want to use Catalan in their products. We have subsidies for board games, video games, translations of non-literary books. We also have subsidies for businesses. That's what I've been helping the most with. And apart from that, we also look how we can convince businesses and society in general, but specifically in the socioeconomic part of society, how we can convince them to use more Catalan, because we are certain that Catalan people will be grateful if a certain brand, especially if it's a popular brand, they have their product in Catalan, even their website, their apps, all of the things that relate to the modern world. And we think of arguments that will convince them, because the point is convincing, not only coercing them. I guess what we want to do is make the world more diverse, and we expect that people will align with this idea.
So, for this third section of the episode, I would like from both of you something that you love about Catalan. It really can be anything. We've had all sorts of things on this podcast so far, ranging from, particular bits of vocabulary to particular bits of morphology or bits of history as well. You have free rein, but please tell us. Joey, you start us off. What is something that you just love about Catalan?
Something that I love is a little thing, but I find it very satisfying. It's the direction of the accents above vowels. So in E and U, when they're stressed, they acquire an acute accent. When A is stressed, it acquires a grave accent. And the letters O and E have two values each, O and O for O, and E and E for E. And when it's O and E, they have an acute accent. When O and E, a grave accent. So what you have there is the acute accent representing the higher vowels and the grave accent representing the lower vowels. And what it means is that you can actually, at least when they're stressed, you can distinguish between O and O and E and E in writing, which is something you can often not do for languages, and which I find extremely satisfying. I hope I explained that quite well. I know it's a very sort of niche point.
No. So what you're saying then is that they've inherited five vowel letters and they're using the direction of the accent to tell you what kind of vowel it is. They're creating more letters for themselves by the direction of the little accent on top. Is that what you're saying?
That's it exactly. They have the problem which all the Romance languages have, I think, of inheriting too few vowel letters from Latin, but I think they've solved it very nicely there for the stressed vowels, that is, not for the unstressed ones.
Yes, a problem that the almost Romance language that we're speaking right now, I think, also suffers with in not having enough vowel letters for its extensive inventory of vowels. I'm talking about English, if that wasn't clear. Wonderful. I like that a lot. I think that's a really nice little piece of information to look out for if you come across a little bit of written Catalan in the wild. Albert, your turn. Tell us something you love.
Well, there are many things I could say that I love about my language, especially regarding the language, but I'm going to go with a sociolinguistic thing. And that's the fact that despite it's a minoritized language, it's quite big, and it feels very empowering when once you, if you live in Catalonia and you see that you constantly hear about news saying the state government wants to reduce or not reduce the hours of Catalan, but may have more hours of Spanish in school and approve different laws that might attempt to the use of Catalan, so it will reduce inevitably. It's very empowering to go abroad and see that people are learning it and to find people who are passionate about it. I'm not only speaking of Joey, but because in Cardiff University, there's a Catalan lecturer and she has many students there learning Catalan, as there are Catalan lecturers, I think, in maybe 200 universities around the world. And that allowed me, when I was still a student in Catalan language literature, that I had linguistic companion, and she was from Oxford. She's a historian. She was learning Catalan because she's very interested in Mediterranean medieval history, and Catalan is very useful for that, but also because her mother was once an Erasmus student who went to Barcelona and made Catalan friends, and she learned Catalan. And yeah, it feels very empowering to see how people abroad are interested in the language, and they can learn the language if they want, mainly in universities, but also through the internet. The Catalan government has many resources. One of these Parla.cat, that is parla.cat, and there you will find all the resources you need to learn Catalan from beginners to advanced. And also there's a forum with people from different countries who are learning Catalan, so they can support each other and give tips to each other.
With regret, I have to pose to you the third and final question of this whole format, because I want to know again from both of you something that you want the people listening to know about this language. As we've discussed so much, but aside from that, or including that, if you want to re-emphasize something, please tell us. Let's start with you, Alba. What is something that you know, you really want to impress upon the good people listening?
Well, I guess the basic idea they should get from this is that Catalan is its own language. It's not Spanish. It's not Occitan. So very simple idea. It's a language on its own.
Fair enough. A point very well made. Super. Joey, do you want to come in on that or with something different?
Well, I echo everything Alba says, but I'm going to use this to add another interesting fact, which I hope is interesting. Most of the languages which derive from Latin take for their... Of course, Latin had no definite articles, but most of the languages which derive from Latin take the form ille, which is, I think, something like that. So le, la, lo, il, etc. All derive from ille. But in the Balearic Islands specifically... the definite articles are us for the masculine and sa for the feminine. I believe I've got that right. And these derive from ipse, which is something like the word for self in Latin. And this is something which I believe is only shared with Sardinian, which is believed possibly to have been one of the earliest Romance languages to sort of split off from the rest. That's just a little interesting tidbit. It's the Mediterranean islands which retain this this form of ipse for the definite article.
Fantastic. So if people find themselves on those islands at any point, anybody going clubbing in Ibiza or having a nice holiday in Mallorca, look out for these Catalan definite articles. It's a novelty. It's quite distinct for those islands.
When Menorca was under English rule in the 18th century, many Menorcan people emigrated to Florida. So the language was present there. There were Catalan communities and they kept the language for a couple of centuries. You can only find some words there. But yeah, I could find you a list of Floridian words that come from Catalan.
Please do. Well, this has been a real treat. I've learned a lot just sitting here listening to the two of you. I dare say the listeners have as well. I think you really, really got home the point that this is a separate language with so many distinctive features, and it proudly takes its place among the other better known members of the Romance family. Super. Well, Joey, Albert, Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me today. And well, till the next time with some other language, perhaps.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you, Tani. It's been excellent. And thank you very much for producing this podcast. It's a wonderful resource for language lovers.
For a final fun fact, there are loads of connections between Catalan and English that I could mention. The primary reason for these connections is, of course, that Catalan belongs to the Romance language family, from which English has acquired heaps of vocabulary. However, the borrowing goes in the other direction too. The Catalan lexicon has all sorts of words that come from the Germanic family to which English belongs. Within the vocabulary of Catalan, Spanish, and other languages of Spain, there are layers of Germanic loanwords, differing as to when they were borrowed. The oldest layer contains words adopted before the different Romance languages were yet to emerge, while spoken Latin was still pretty unified. This layer is reflected in Catalan words like sabor, meaning soap, or fresc, meaning fresh. A later layer comes from Frankish, the influential language of the powerful Franks. Such words were likely transmitted into Catalan southward via the northern Romance languages that would become French and Occitan. And they include Catalan words like ganivet, meaning knife, and related to the English word. What's more, in between those two layers of Germanic influence, there is the very light legacy of Gothic. This was the Germanic language of the Visigoths, who carved out a large kingdom for themselves out of the crumbling Roman Empire. Unsurprisingly, this tiny elite in time came to adopt the local language, but Gothic may be the source of a handful of words, place names, personal names, and even an affix in Catalan and Spanish. Most notably, there's the much-debated theory that from the perspective of the north, the land south of the Pyrenees was specifically thought of as Gothland in early medieval times. And so Gothland is the origin of the name Catalonia. That's everything for this episode. If you like what you're hearing, please do subscribe and give the show a rating wherever you get your podcasts, and do recommend it to all your friends and family to help to share the linguistic love. My thanks, of course, go to my guests today, Alba and Joey, and also to you, dear listener, for listening along. Keep well, and keep loving language.